Hello and welcome to the Landmark. I mean, they're not. I keep sending us stuff, please, listeners. We're really getting down to some.
Immediately, just, postmark came to mind, which has so many different connotations.
It really does. It really does. But the Landmark, I think, is nice because
it is. Yes,
know,
it is.
Yeah. High profile.
High profile. Or isn't it like a crappy leisure wear company?
I don't know. Or something, the name like of a that. Hotel. Yeah.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah. One of the things that was highlighted that we didn't get a chance to talk about because we ran out of time was the fight between Jeff Bezos and Donald Trump, which is like the Battle of the Titans.
It's the Battle of the Bald Titan versus yes. the Absurdly Haired Titan.
Yes, that's right.
So yeah, it's an interesting one. So what do you make of it?
Well, it seems like it's just a game of bullying between, again, with Trump, the cyberbully, but just being mad at people who seemingly write negative things about him. And I think which was strange in this situation, because of course he goes after Amazon. Amazon doesn't own the Washington Post.
Right.
Bezos does. So In some ways it was interesting to me that he didn't go after Bezos, the person, but went after the company.
I love the rumor that Bezos is going to buy Twitter so he could shut down his Twitter account.
I thought that
would be helpful. Yeah. That's when you know that you're a billionaire, right?
Yeah.
Because you can basically do that, but whether that comes off or not. Okay, so there's a serious point in here, and the serious point is the fear of Amazon. Now, interesting thing about Amazon, Amazon's never made a profit, right? It's never made a profit. Amazon web services, right, when you talk to Alexa and tell her your deepest fears inadvertently,
yes.
that's what makes a profit, right?
Yeah.
And all the platforms
and
their data
storage.
Right?
Data
storage, right? The whole sort of things that we know Amazon for, basically, you know, packages, deliveries, Prime, all this, none of that makes any money. And this company is valued at, like, I forget what it is, something like 43 times earnings or something, like crazy like price multiples. And what that means is the market's basically making a bet that a company that makes no money is the most valuable company in the world. Now, how do you square that circle? You do it simply by symbol. Ultimately, they're a monopoly. They're going to crowd out groceries. They're going to crowd out this, that, and the next thing. And the United States doesn't like that. From the Sherman Act on, we've busted up monopolies, right? So in a way, Trump is kind of like doing the good fight for like markets.
Mm-hmm.
Now, whether that's his motivation or not is a totally different story. But this is a guy who understands retail. This is a guy who, you know, probably has friends who run businesses that sell stuff. And there's a general fear out there that Amazon is just killing all these people. Now, whether they are killing retail and high street, it's actually quite contentious, right? A lot of where the malls are closing down are in areas that 30 years ago were rich but now aren't.
Oh, so this is more about suburban poverty than
it is about the digital transformation. But, you know, we like that story.
Yes.
Amazon rises, malls go down, QED, Amazon's killing malls.
Right.
Now, whether that's true or not, you know, there you go. But Amazon has become a political football. So even if Trump wasn't doing it for his own idiosyncratic reasons, you know, Amazon's in the limelight, and you know, guess who else is in the limelight? Facebook.
Yes, and it was so interesting. I mean, I wanted to watch Zuckerberg testify before Congress, but I thought it was such a window dressing moment on his part, meaning that Mark Zuckerberg wants to turn a profit, and now, but they just got caught doing bad stuff, so they have to like say I'm sorry and do the song and dance. I it's not at all clear to me that they are sorry, and that Zuckerberg's point of like, oh, they got my data too, like it just seemed like such a I'm being forced to say mea culpa. Please leave me alone now.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. I loved it. I was just waiting 30 seconds after he started talking for the gifts to start arriving.
I mean, seriously.
And my favorite one was the guy who caught him sort of looking slightly askew.
Yeah.
And then juxtaposed the face of Commander Data from Star Trek The Next Generation.
Yes, yeah.
And the likeness is incredible. Yeah. It's just like, oh my God, he really is Commander Data.
I saw this funny tweet that said, Mark Zuckerberg is now doing what everybody hates and explaining technology to old people.
Oh yeah, I saw that one as well. That was kind of brilliant.
That was good. Pretty great.
But, you know, okay, again, back to the serious point, right? What is it they do? They're basically data scrapers.
Yes.
But they don't have to scrape because people are dumb enough to give them all their data. And they give them their pictures and their friends and they click agreements that allow them to harvest data from the 160 people that stupidly befriended you, etc.
Yep.
So there's a real issue here in terms of, you know, privacy, access, data.
Yeah.
Why does this matter? I mean, think about the following. Every time you've had, a kidney pain, right, or a stomach pain or whatever, it's lasted a couple of days. Well, it's so much easier to go to Google than it is to go to the doctor, right?
Yes.
So what you're doing is uploading to a third-party private that basically harvests data that you might have something wrong with your health.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think your health insurance company might want to know this?
Yes, exactly.
So we're giving all this stuff away. There's massive sort of privacy liability issues, etc. And we've just woken up to the fact.
Well, and that Google tracks how fast I can make it from here to Boston. And do I want my car insurance company to know that I can actually do it in under the amount of time that Google is telling me?
So there's all this. So they're monetizing every part with every data they can. And they're becoming fantastically rich. I mean, guess what? These are some of the top companies, right?
Yes.
They don't actually employ that many people. They don't pay much in the way of tax. They sit on enormous amounts of cash. And whether, you know, don't do evil is a good enough mantra when you've basically got, I mean, with Facebook, it's not as if they were evil, but if you think Cambridge Analytica were evil and they were simply just buying data from them, well, you know, just cross the dots and follow the chain of causation.
Well, and on your point about monopolies, there was the shooting at YouTube that took place.
Right.
And then, and no one was killed. I think two people were injured, but they took them to the Zuckerberg San Francisco General Hospital. And I just thought, good Lord, if we're going to talk about monopolies, and I thought, did Zuckerberg buy the hospital? Though he just bought the naming rights, like to a big sports arena or something.
My goodness.
So just yet another level of thinking about the monopolies that exist in the tech world. I wonder if Zuckerberg had a chance to say goodbye to Paul Ryan when he was in D.C.
That's a nice segue.
Yeah.
Did their paths cross? So Ryan's one of those. I mean, I've hated Ryan forever, right? There's just something horrible about this guy who was bred by basically conservative foundations from college on to be elected to basically just argue for businesses should never pay for anything ever. I mean, that's basically the guy's thing. And now he's cashing out, right? So in a way, I should be, you know, delighted. But the thing is, Congress has become so horrid that even him leaving isn't an improvement. So think about the Republican Party. What are they left with now, right? So you're going to have two wings. One is the plutocratic populist wing, which is the Trump wing, right? So we'll do tax cuts for billionaires and we'll find one or two people who think that getting $2,000 back in a tax is a good deal. I don't understand how this is happening because the tax cuts actually kick in next year. Mm-hmm. And yet people are showing up at Trump rallies saying that they saved $2,000 this year. Like, not me. Trust me. I'm doing my taxes this week.
Right.
I did not save anything. Right. Next year, we'll wait and see. So I don't know what's going on with that. But anyway, the point is, you got the plutocratic populist wing. And then the other side, you got the Tea Party, which is, we're not paying for anything ever.
Right.
The 17th century economist, right?
Right.
So that's it. That's the sort of the leading party at the moment. It's like, oh my God. So, you know, you can start with Gingrich's Congress and basically, this is your neck of the woods, not mine, but the way I'd tell the story is they start with Gingrich's Congress, you get the sort of basically the new do-nothing, know-nothings, right? And then zero cooperation, right? Block everything. Don't do anything unless it basically screws the other side. Ryan comes in and tries to leverage this into basically, let's make sure that businesses pay for nothing ever and we'll just continue this agenda. He then leaves and we're left with plutocratic populists on the one hand and sort of 17th century economists on the other. It's like, oh my God, whatever happened to the grand old party?
Well, and it makes you actually maybe yearn for someone like Paul Ryan, but it made me...
I would never go that far.
For this moment, was even nonpartisan, I thought I hate all elected officials because from my point of view, just as a political scientist or not even actually as a voter, I thought you are so scummy because you don't want to lose and you're worried about losing your seat and being embarrassed on the national stage as sitting Speaker of the House. And so that's what you're going to do. So I just thought, God, what a, just a spineless person. And then I also thought, I mean, and this is sort
then
of,
you
I,
thought about the cash he's going to
yes,
get.
Yes, as sitting on the boards and all the whatever consulting gigs he'll have and the lobbying dollars that he'll get. I'm sure he'll be just fine. In Wisconsin, southern Wisconsin.
He wants to do that. He'll go to D.C. Wasn't it Dennis Hassert, whatever his name was? Didn't he end up running Heritage on one of these things?
No, Denny Hassert's the one who was from Illinois that got caught in a very skeezy...
Oh, so who's the one that ended up running
the
Heritage?
Wrestling coach. Not Boehner. It was one before.
The one before, right?
Yes.
So basically, there's a new revolving door, right?
Oh, completely.
Which is conservative think tanks loaded with billionaire dollars by politicians who do what they want.
Yep.
And then after a discrete period of time, 2 weeks, you then join the foundation, right? Yeah. I mean, this is the new revolving door.
Yeah.
Now, not to say that Democrats don't have their equivalent, right?
Yeah.
But it's usually Brookings and it's not quite as well paid.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I was also thinking from an academic point of view about Paul Ryan is that has there, you know, there's always the strong speaker, weak president.
Right.
Is he also, who knows whether there's a thought in his head, but the speakership, I think, has diminished in some way, the power, because there's such a strong president now, too.
Not just strong president, also because it's so polarized and so partisan. Yeah, the major problem the speaker used to have was doing a deal with the other side.
That's exactly
it
right.
It wasn't the credibility of your promise vis-a-vis your own people.
Yeah.
So at this point, this has become the job that nobody should want.
Yes, because you have to do these deals with the party. You can't even do the deals within your party because
you're not allowed to do the deal. But secondly, if you do, your own people will stab you in the back.
Right, because you have 17th century economists and the...
And the plutocrats.
Yeah, exactly. The Syria tweets, the Russia war. I mean, this is, of course, the... I liked what the Kremlin spokesperson said about the tweets that President Trump has been sending out over the last couple days about Russia. We do not participate in Twitter diplomacy. And I thought, if the Kremlin is saying this, wow, something has really screwed up in this world. It seems like such a wag the dog kind of moment in some ways to move our attention elsewhere from all the...
What do you mean, Kari? Spell that out for us.
Well, yes, wag the dog. Well, your personal lawyer was just raided, or as Trump said, in a witch hunt earlier in the week.
In which you surround yourself with military officers and call it attack on the state.
Yes.
Oh my God, yes.
Witch in language.
Yes, exactly.
So is it a distraction?
Just to be clear, what you're saying is he's got all this stuff on his plate to do with the Russia investigation. If I attack Russia in Syria, how could I possibly be under the influence of Russians?
Yes, that logic.
That does make sense to me, because the only other alternative is this, like, you know, well, we can deal with like 300,000 civilians being starved to death, raped, machine guns, run over by trucks, barrel bombed with conventional explosives, blown to pieces. But the minute someone uses chemicals, that's it. We all need to go to war. It's like, really? Well, you know, I can understand chemical weapons taboo. You don't want to normalize it, all the rest of it. But the situation's pretty horrible already, right? Does this mean that's it? This is it. Now we need to go after, you know, Syrians. And if the Russians get caught for enough. If you're the United States, if you're deliberately firing on Russian troops, they will fire back.
Yes.
And this will escalate.
And they will shoot down our
airliners. Oh, yeah, they totally will. There's no... I don't know about airliners, but they will definitely go after you. If you've got a carrier out there and it's in range, they will go for it. They will not screw around.
Well, and to the serious point on this, of course, Trump just took the Obama administration to the cleaners in the election about the red line that the Obama administration didn't do anything about.
Yeah.
And now the Trump administration is pretty much in the same spot, meaning here's our gigantic red line and all of the rhetoric now that has escalated things. And are they actually is the administration going to do anything? I mean, it's an interesting place to be at for two very, obviously, ideologically different administrations. But now in a similar place.
So there's another one that's interested in this is, why would anybody use chemical weapons knowing that everybody's going to go down mental on you for doing so?
Yeah.
It's not as if it gives you a huge strategic advantage. It's just like it's a whole thing. So the other narrative out there is this is a false flag, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the Russians didn't really poison the two people in Britain, yes or no.
Okay.
They're not really using this. This is the opposition using it on themselves, or it's fake or whatever, right? Now, you know, not getting into like all this is fake, et cetera, et cetera, right? It does beg the legitimate question, you know, the Russians are there embedded with the Syrians. They're winning the war. Why would they want to do this?
Yeah, it's so such a strange game of chess happening, and it's I just am sort of terrified because you're right in that Russia will punch back.
Oh,
it's not a non-punching nation.
Exactly. I mean, if there's one nation in this world you're absolutely sure will punch you back, it's them.
Yes.
So, you know, if you be very careful with this. I mean, do you escalate, right? Because if you do and then you go after their airfields, right, what's going to happen is they're going to reinforce. You really will end up in a fighting match. Do you want to be in a fighting match with the Russians directly? That's where you're headed, at the same time as you're doing a trade war with China.
Yeah.
Right, suddenly we're getting close to the oh my god, this is all going pear-shaped scenario that everyone always feared.
Right, and
so
and
let's hope it doesn't.
Yes, let's try to think about some optimism here. On an optimistic point,
yes.
Maybe less optimistic, have you received your wedding invitation to Meghan Markle and Prince Harry's wedding?
No, but the chances of me going have gone up astronomically.
Oh, they have.
Do you know why?
I don't know why.
Because they've banned all the politicians.
Really? That sounds like a great wedding, actually.
It's brilliant. First
Super
of all, who would want politicians at your wedding?
Theresa May, is she a good dancer? I don't know.
I don't know. I definitely don't know. So what this, I think, actually comes from, I don't know if listeners, or if if anybody's listening, if you remember this, but shortly after Trump was elected and Meghan Markle became engaged to the rogue prince, there was supposedly Trump had said, if they want a good deal on Brexit, I need to go to the wedding.
Oh, seriously.
Right. Wow. Now, I don't know if that's true or not, right? But a great way of avoiding, like, you know, inviting Obama and inviting Trump is just to not invite anybody.
Yeah.
And if you don't invite any of them, suddenly lots of space opens up for members of the public.
Wow.
So what they're going to have to do is start to find interesting people. So it'll be things like disabled athletes.
And veterans
and all that sort of stuff. All of whom would probably have a really good time at what is, if you get rid of all the polls, probably going to be a really kick-ass party.
Yes.
I think I'd like to party with Meghan and Markle and
too.
Prince Harry. I think it would be a pretty good... I bet the booze will be flowing and people will be dancing
prince
and it will
Harry's
be fun.
The fun prince.
He's the
prince. He's the cool prince.
Totally.
And they're going to have a totally... Yeah, I agree. I don't think William will be... I think he'll, you know, be very quiet, sipping his white wine or something.
Exactly.
But,
yes.
Yeah, no, I think this is the royal wedding.
This is the raucous one. So, you know, there is a chance now that we could both get an invite. So I'm going to suggest to anybody listening to this that you find the website for the royal wedding and you suggest that at least Kari gets to go.
Please do. Please. It would fulfill my long-term dreams.
Exactly. Yeah. And then you could have that sort of surrogate fairy tale princess wedding that your mother always dreaded.
Yes. And then I can report back on all the gossip.
Oh, what's the noise this week?
It sounds like breaking glass or something.
It's some kind of like typewriter come cash register from hell. I don't know. It's sort of, you know, the Ides of Chimes of weird. Okay. Anyway, that means that we're out.
Yeah,
so,
we've gotten the hook.
So from the Watson Institute at Brown University, this has been another episode of Kari and Mark Survey the Damage.
Yes.
And we'll see you in a couple of weeks.
Thanks, everybody.